Okay.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Dr. Newman. This
You're
has
welcome.
Been
this is
wonderful. You're listening to WGTD HDFM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again or join us on our Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Newman.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring Sandra's Mexican Cuisine, offering tacos, tamales, and more. For breakfast, freshly baked corn muffins and fresh fruit cups. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on and along 2nd Avenue and Plaza Douay.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Hawthorne Hollow will present Tots in the Park Tuesdays through August 15th from 10 to 11 at Pets Park in Kenosha. It's a free parent-child participation program for children ages 3 to 5. Each week, the program will have a different theme.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and today we're looking ahead. We're looking ahead to the congressional election and the Democrats who are going to challenge House Speaker and our first congressional district representative, Paul Ryan. My guest for the first half of the program is Randy Bryce. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation.
Just so our listeners know, we are pre-recording. I'm pre-recording Randy on Wednesday morning, and we're going to pre-record Kathy on Friday afternoon. So if we don't reference some current events, that's why. Randy, why don't you begin by introducing yourself to our listeners and telling them who you are and where you're from and why you're running.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a lifelong resident of southeastern Wisconsin. Born and raised in the area. I'm a graduate of public schools. After graduating from high school, I enlisted in the Army, spent 3 years in the Army, stationed at Fort Bragg, was deployed to Honduras, Central America in the mid-80s. After I got out, I worked with homeless veterans, worked sometimes two full-time jobs at a time until I entered into an apprenticeship with the Ironworkers Union. And that was my ticket to the middle class. I've been doing that for the past 20 years. I'm also a cancer survivor. I was told I wouldn't be able to have children as a result of the cancer, but I'm now also a father. I have a 10-year-old miracle son. And I've been very involved with the community as far as worker issues and veteran issues.
Tell us a little bit more about your experience with the worker issues and veterans issues. It sounds like you're trying to represent people like yourself to me.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do. The first district is made up of a lot of people just like me that, you know, we get up in the morning, pack a lunch, go to work, do our best, and we've been working harder, and we're getting less. And there have been recent attacks on the state of Wisconsin dealing with worker issues. So it's been very important to me that we have a safe workplace so that we can return to our families, that we earn what we're worth. Salaries haven't risen at the rate of that inflation has. Health insurance is being a big issue recently. But then also, as far as it goes with veterans, it seems like we spend all this money sending us to war and very little taking care of us when we get back to heal the wounds.
Do you want to give us some examples of your leadership in the union or labor issues and in the veterans work you've done?
Sure, absolutely. I'll just bring up right now with I'm president of the Wisconsin Veterans Chamber of Commerce. Our organization is just over 2 years old. It's a group that we formed because one has not existed in the state. And what we do is we look and we're an advocate for veteran-owned businesses or businesses that actively seek to hire veterans. And in our second year, we've managed to put a full-time executive director on, and we're within the top 25 Chamber of Commerce's within the state.
What's your role? Do you have an officership in that organization, Randy?
I'm president of the Wisconsin Veterans Chamber of Commerce, yes.
And when you established that, what was the vision that you were leading toward for the long term? Where do you hope that organization will take the state in maybe 5 or 10 years?
Well, we've managed to include colleges, both public and private, and it's a partnership. And what we're seeking to do is locate veterans and help them be, as you know, the motto was "Be all you can be" at one time in the Army, and that's what we're doing in civilian life, because we feel that people that signed up and gave, you know, volunteered best years of their life are able to do something in civilian society. So that's exactly what we've been able to do, and we're just having tremendous success.
By the way, as a note to our listeners, if you hear strange noises, banging and pounding, we're still doing construction downstairs in the lobby of the Bioscience Technology, Information Technology building here at the Gateway Technical College Kenosha campus. So we're not trying to saw him in half here. We're going to take good care of Mr. Randy Bryce, but that's what the racket is in the background if you hear it. Randy, now, you're putting together a campaign organization. What kind of a campaign organization did you put together so far? Where is that at?
Well, it's been tremendous. Excuse me. And before we had our announcement, people had been looking for a candidate that, you know, were interested in getting rid of Paul Ryan because he's obviously, you know, Speaker of the House. Hasn't been speaking out on behalf of working people's houses, but I've managed to bring Bill Hires on board as a senior advisor, and he did work. He did Senator Duckworth's campaign, Mayor de Blasio in New York City, Senator Fetterman, also Senator, U.S. Senator Gillibrand in New York. He's known for working with underdog candidates and making them successful. Also recently, last Friday, we brought in David Keith as campaign manager, and he's fresh off a success in a special election in California with Jimmy Gomez, and he's also he was also working with Alan Grayson. So there's a lot of experience, and really looking forward to working with them. And just, you know, the way that our launch took off, it's great to have assembled a successful team.
Well, there was a bit of national publicity about your candidacy not that long ago. I believe I saw something on MSNBC. I'm not sure. I think CNN as well. Tell us a little bit about that. Was that surprising to you?
It was surprising. I knew just mentioning who I was working with that we were going to have a successful launch. But I had no idea it would launch to be as tremendously successful as it was. And it just shows a huge hunger, not just in the first district, but throughout the country, for working people to run for office, for just a basic message. You know, we didn't discover electricity or anything like that, but here's a working person and running to represent one of us. You know, and since then, like today, we just announced huge endorsements from Senators Larson and Wirch, also state reps Christine Sinicki, Todd Onstad, Jocasta Zamarripa, and David Crowley. So it's we're just building on that, and the momentum has been just incredible.
So how does a guy from Kenosha get all this high-powered talent lined up behind him?
Well, I was asked by Senator Larson. He had been approached. Rob Zerban had made some contacts. He previously ran for Congress, and me and Rob had become friends. And so Rob had kind of a network built up, and he kind of plugged me into that. And when they got my name, I talked to some people on the phone, and then there were suggestions as far as, you know, this person might be good to talk to. And it was all done through networking. And I was told that I'm one of the passion campaigns that people just got, you know, because they've done so many political campaigns, that this was one they were really looking forward to doing. And if they could find a good candidate, they were willing to actually take the time and help out.
It does amaze me that as I travel around the country, and I do a fair amount of that, that all of my friends and just the various business associates, when they find out where I'm from, they ask me about the 1st Congressional District in Wisconsin and about the speaker and express interest in the race. It kind of amazes me how aware people are. So that must have been a factor. Are all these people paid on your staff? You have a lot of paid people? How many people do you have?
Well, right now we have a full-time campaign manager, David, Bill Hires. Also, Nick Ramos is doing communications and scheduling. And we're looking to bring on a couple more people full-time. We've been so successful just in our first 12 days. We've been able to raise over $430,000. And at an average of just over $25 per contribution. So it's financially, it's been incredibly successful, and we're looking forward to adding a couple more people.
Now, you know, the next question is going to be, has that support come mainly from in-state or out-of-state?
We've had support from all 50 states, and it's just incredible the amount. You know, people look at, as you said, Speaker of the House, and he's responsible for what legislation gets discussed and what gets voted on. So people feel that they have an interest in him, you know, and he's traveling throughout the country, bringing in a lot more money at per donor than I am. And it's really great to see all of this support.
What's going to be the major theme of your campaign as you position it at the moment?
Well, the number one, I mean, there's several issues to be discussed, but the number one topic right now that's going on is his refusal to have a public town hall. He's come out and stated that basically, he's running away from people, and my goal is to run for people. If you know, we have to ask Congressman Mark Pocan to come in from a neighboring congressional district to let us know how this legislation, this health care bill, is going to affect us. Nobody knows, and I think that at the very least, you know, we need to have somebody come here and tell us what's going on in Washington, D.C., and especially with his position as Speaker. He should be more than willing to listen.
Well, Speaker Ryan does have these telephone call-in conversations, and he goes to various companies and speaks to their employees. He calls those town halls. I take it you don't.
There's no town involved. They're not public events. I know personally somebody that went to try to attend the last one he had, where he has the captive audiences. And she was denied. She asked, is there a town hall going on? Secret Service turned her away. They said, yes, but you can't enter. And also, Mark Pocan was talking about those teletown halls, which are basically infomercials paid for by tax dollars. And that's by invitation only. I don't have an opportunity to talk to Representative Ryan, and none of my neighbors do.
Randy Bryce, Democratic candidate vying against Kathy Myers for the Democratic nomination to run against Speaker Ryan. You know, everybody is saying that Paul Ryan is unbeatable. He has a massive war chest. He'll just get bigger. He gets national exposure every time you turn around. Is he unbeatable? Is there any place in the district where you could win outside of the cities of Kenosha and Racine and maybe parts of Rock County? That the northern part of the district is very, very Republican, with the latest district lines. What do you feel? What are people telling you?
His popularity is rapidly sinking. He in 2012, I believe it was, he lost his own neighborhood by like 2-1. With his sinking popularity, with his refusal to address people, to talk to people in a district, to hear what we have to say, it's not looking good for him. And I'd also like to add that within 12 days, I've been the National Republican Congressional Committee, which is our, you know, the Republican equivalent of the DCCC that runs congressional candidates for Democrats. They've already put out a national ad attacking me, calling me a liberal agitator. And I mean, if they knew what it was like working on a job site 8 hours as an iron worker and the banter that goes back and forth with us, I'm like, is that the best you can do? And I'm laughing. And it shows that they're afraid of me. They're afraid to face me. They're already attacking me. They know who I am. And I'm looking forward to more of the same.
So you're proud of your enemies.
Absolutely. it tells you where you stand.
Randy, can you bring back the Trump blue-collar and white-collar voters that into the Democratic fold? Is that possible?
Well, let me.
That's
give
what you're banking on, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I'm people like me. That's we're expecting to get people just like me. And let me give you a story about a work site. I just was through right before our announcement. I was working at the VA in Milwaukee over by Miller Park. We were building a two-floored parking structure. My first day there, we're getting ready and getting set up and kind of partnered up with who you're going to work with. And the guy I was working with was like, you know what? I'm really sick of what's going on in Washington. Why can't we have, you know, a guy like us? And I'd never worked with him before, and I just smiled. I was like, you know, I asked him, I said, where do you live? He's like, McGuanago. I said, you're going to have my sign in your front yard. And, I mean, there's people I work with that have voted for Trump that I ask him, I'm like, I understand why you did it. He had a good message as far as he's going to be in favor of working people. I told you he wasn't going to be honest and actually follow through. And I'm like, how has he done? Who's been helping you? Has he done what he said he's going to do? Can you name one thing? And they just kind of hang their head and say, no, he hasn't. I was like, and they know me. They know where I've stood. I've been elected to the executive board for the ironworkers for, you know, like the last 9 years. I've been members elected of other labor councils as well. People know that I actually live this. I'm not a contractor who stiffs workers.
It sounds like you're really counting on the union support, although the unions have certainly thinned out in influence compared to the way it was in 1950 when I was a kid. You're counting on a huge proportion of them coming out to vote to counteract the conservative part of the district? Is that it?
No, not. My message has always been it's not just the union, but it's helping educate people that unions benefit all workers. And my concern has always been with safe working conditions, with good-paying jobs, being able to take your family to the doctor, take care of yourself, to actually achieve the American dream without needing to look for help from the government. You know, true freedom for me as a veteran is being able to stand on your own 2 feet, and that requires responsible employers.
We're here in Community Matters with Randy Bryce, one of the two Democratic candidates vying to oppose Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, in the next congressional election. We'll be interviewing the other candidate, Kathy Myers, a little later in the program. Randy, can you distinguish yourself from Kathy Myers, who will be your opponent for the nomination? What's the difference between the two of you?
Well, I've
why Randy?
Well, I've been very active in this area. People know I've been going to testify on behalf of worker issues. I've literally built this community with my hands. I'm a veteran, and I survived cancer. I'm a fighter. I've been getting just an incredible amount of support from, you know, Vote Vets has endorsed me, Democracy for America. State legislators recognize the work that I've done, and, you know, I would just say that people in the area know where I've been, that I'm not somebody that's going to make promises. I can just say, look what I've done, instead of making promises as to where I'm going to go.
So you're distinguishing yourself from your opponent in the primary on the basis of how long you've been in the district and your involvement in the district, basically, well, if I'm hearing you. Is that right?
I would say overall my experiences that have gotten me to where I am is, you know, as far as being a veteran, cancer survivor, union iron worker that's literally built, you know, changed the way that this community looks.
Sounds like you're counting on people identifying with your life experience to a great extent.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, is there an issue that you think is the leading issue in the campaign that you're going to be emphasizing in the primary as you look ahead? And it's a long way off, I know. But where do you see the important issues being in order to convince voters to come over to the Democratic side, and particularly to elect you to oppose Paul Ryan? What do you think is going to be critical?
Well, health care is going to be a huge one. And right now, they're currently trying to, you know, the Senate is trying to get this thing done behind closed doors. Nobody knows what's contained within it. And Paul Ryan just voted for a bill in the House that is not actually, it's not giving anything. They call it a health care bill, but it doesn't really do anything to give people health care. It's taking it away from us. And, you know, issues like that, good-paying jobs. I think the number one issue is that he just refuses to meet with us publicly and representatives. He should do his job. If I don't show up for work, I'm going to get fired, and they're going to get somebody who will do my job.
What if he suddenly starts holding a bunch of town halls? Would that make a difference to your candidacy?
Well, He's already said it would be helpful. It would be, I would see it as a positive that I was able to effect change and bring him to the community. That's, I'm counting on making him come here and be accountable. And if he's not going to do it now before the election, we're going to make sure that it happens on November 6, 2018.
What do you think is the strongest personality trait that you bring to the job of going to Washington and representing the 1st District, Mr. Bryce?
Well, as an iron worker, we learn that there is no such thing as impossible. I mean, just looking at Miller Park, looking at some of the projects I've been on, some of the incredible sizes of and weights of iron that we've done, it's my fight, my willingness to fight for working people. And, I mean, every iron worker, when we hear the word can't, we actually, in our heads, we hear won't.
I see. If you were to envision what you could bring back for the district to help the district, what kinds of legislation would you advocate to help people who live in the 1st Congressional District here in southeastern Wisconsin?
Number one would be a demand for materials made in America. And that's how we're going to get people back. Kenosha used to be a manufacturing center. We made automobiles. You know, here there's a big abandoned plant in Janesville. In Waukesha, some of the best paying jobs in that county left for Canada. We need to demand that what we buy is made in the United States. That's going to create a demand for good paying jobs for our neighbors.
Anything else you would emphasize?
Healthcare. Everybody deserves a right to be able to go talk to a doctor. The number one leading cause of bankruptcies is due to medical costs, and that's not right. This isn't the America that I enlisted in the Army to protect. This is, you know, where people are being taken advantage of. The income inequality has just been spread further and further apart every year since the Reagan years when he tried his trickle-down experiment. That did not work. It's not working.
Mr. Bryce, if people want to find out more about you and look for you on the web or on Facebook, how would they find you, on Facebook or on the web?
On Facebook, it's Randy Bryce.
B-R-Y-C-E.
B-R-Y-C-E, correct. On Twitter, it's at Iron Stash. And our website is www.randybryceforcongress.com.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're here now with Kathy Myers, also contending for the Democratic nomination to face Paul Ryan in the next election. Kathy, tell us a little bit about yourself. What qualifies you to be running for the Democratic nomination and eventually to run against, Speaker Paul Ryan?
Well, I'm a high school English teacher. I've been teaching for 23 years, and I'm also on the Janesville School Board. I've been elected twice. And I was elected in 2013 and again in 2016. And I'm, you know, running for, I mean, as far as what makes me qualified, I'm a concerned citizen, and I've got some ideas and some values that I think are will resonate with voters. And so that's, you know, that's why I'm running.
Tell us a little bit about your life experience that's brought you to this point, what kind of work you've done and so forth.
Sure. Well, I'm actually from Iowa originally. I'm from Iowa City area, and I am the daughter of a small business owners. My parents owned an interstate truck stop in Coralville, Iowa, called Hawkeye Truck Stop, and they owned it for, you know, a few decades. I think it was 33 years. And so, you know, I don't know if you parents ever owned a business, but when your family owns a business, you are tied to the business. And so
that's right.
I've been working. I'm actually going to turn 55 here pretty soon, and I'd like to say that I've been gainfully employed since I was 10. And so as a matter of fact, the day of my 10th birthday, my dad came home from the truck stop. I was waiting around, you know, for friends to come over and have a party, and he walks in. He'd already been there, and he said, hey, how old are you anyway? And I said, well, I'm 10, you know, like, who doesn't know that? And he said, why don't you have a job yet? And honest to goodness, the next day I am out in the lot and I'm painting islands and picking up trash. And so I spent a lot of time, my formative years, working in the family business. And then I, you know, went off to college, and I did come back and work with the family again. And I, you know, eventually I did some other things. I did radio for a while in Iowa City at KRNA, and and I ran a daycare out of my home for a while as well. Eventually, I went back to school and became certified to teach. And I ended up earning a position at Hananiga High School in Rockton, Illinois in 94. And I've been there ever since. While I've done several things. I've been my union president and vice president. I helped orchestrate our strike center when we were on strike in 2003. I have run, of course, several committees and run several clubs. I ran as a matter of fact, I helped get started the Gay Straight Alliance at Hananiga in 2007. And have run diversity clubs, and I directed plays when I first started while I was there. So I've got a pretty, you know, broad background. Eventually, I found myself in Janesville, and after my youngest went away to college, and I've been there ever since. I've been incredibly engaged in my community, and like I said, I ran for school board in 2013 and was elected I was top vote getter with 4,000 votes. And in 2016, I ran for re-election. Again, I was top vote getter with over 10,000 votes at that time.
Well, thank you. That's a very interesting background. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were doing all that business work, did you ever have your own business at that time, or was it always part of your parents?
Well, it was pretty much part of my parents. I mean, when you know your family has a small business, like I said, you kind of eat, sleep, drink, and breathe it. And I ran my own business when I ran my daycare. So I was state certified, state registered daycare, and I had to obviously work with a budget and plan meals and do books and pay, file all the tax stuff and everything else.
So you weren't the figurehead; you were actually doing the work.
That's right.
I see. Now there's a lot of talk that Paul Ryan is unbeatable. Mm-hmm. That he has this massive war chest that's only going to get larger and larger, and that no one could possibly beat him. How do you feel about that?
Well, unbeatable? I don't know that there's anybody who's totally unbeatable. I think that, and besides, it's not necessarily about whether, you can beat him. It's whether you're going to hold him accountable. And so I think that's, one of the many reasons why I'm running is that there needs to be a challenge to a legitimate, viable challenge to Congressman Ryan. And we need to put his policies under the microscope, and we need to challenge him on those things. And I think I can do that best. And that's why I'm running. So, I'm a teacher. And if there's anything you learn about teaching, especially when you go into it, is that you're accountable. You're accountable to everybody. I'm accountable to 130 students a day, their families, my colleagues, my department, my community. And so, if you've ever worked with teenagers, I teach high school English, right? If you ever worked with teenagers, they'll let you know. They will let you know in a heartbeat whether or not something's not right or if there's a problem. And they also always demand why. Why are you doing it this way? How is this going to benefit? And I think that is something that has been sorely lost with us, the Speaker of the House. He has not been in the district to meet with his constituents. And I think that if there's anything that I understand, it's about the process that you go about in making decisions and about being able to stand up and say, here's what I think and here's why.
I think Speaker Ryan's supporters would say he has been in the district meeting with constituents. How would you respond to that?
Well, he hasn't held town hall. As a matter of fact, he's purposely avoided town halls. So maybe he's met with them, but he certainly hasn't met with anybody who disagrees with them. And, I think that, you're in public life. And I know it must be hard when people are, when you have to answer to everybody, but that's the job. That's it. And so there's really no excuse for him not holding town halls.
That are open to the general public.
Exactly.
So I assume you wouldn't be afraid of being screamed at a town hall meeting in that case.
I work with teenagers. I am not afraid of anything.
your opponent has already gotten some national exposure on CNN and MSNBC. I don't know that I've seen you on the national scale being getting publicity. And of course, they're not going to vote for anyone in Wisconsin, out in Maryland. How did you feel about that? Does that bother you?
Well, I am doing my best to get the word out, and obviously I am making phone calls, and I'm doing a lot of interviews like this one here, and I'm hoping that that translates into more awareness. It's true. I want the national media to come around and recognize that this is a two-person race, that it's not, you know, done and tied up with a bow and it's over, and that I am a viable candidate, and I think I am best positioned to beat Paul Ryan of the two of us. And so so we are looking to that. I've had several interviews with national magazines that are supposed to be coming out here pretty soon. One of them is Vogue. And I never thought I'd ever see my name in a fashion magazine. But they're doing an article on women who are challenging powerful men. And so, there's that. So the notoriety and the reach to a national audience through the media, I think, is coming. I think once people start becoming more aware of the fact that this is a two-person race in the primary, it's not said and done, and that there is a really good candidate, and I think I'm a very good candidate and capable of beating Paul Ryan, I think that the national media will come around.
And, of course, that has implications for campaign finance.
Yes.
Now, this first congressional district, I imagine by now you've studied it pretty carefully, and it was rather carefully drawn.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people who are saying that the way the lines are drawn, it's almost impossible for a Democrat to win in this district. What do your analysts and campaign helpers think about that, and yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I know it's been hard the last 20 years, we haven't necessarily put up as strong of a challenge as we should have as a party since then. I also think that, quite honestly, that the shine has worn off of Paul Ryan. 20 years ago, he had a lot of celebrity, I'm not going to say that he was young then, and he's not now. He's younger than I am, but you know what I mean. There was a lot of interest in him, and of course he presents well, and and he is an articulate person, and so. But I think since then, I think especially nationally, that now that he's in a more national position, I think people are really waking up to. What masters he serves, and they don't think it's them. And as you know, if anything is indicative of that, it's that healthcare plan that he proposed, and that healthcare. As a matter of fact, I don't even want to call it a healthcare plan anymore. It's really a tax break for the very top, and it doesn't serve the needs of people that are most desperate for healthcare, especially with the Medicaid cuts that are included in it. And so I think people are like suddenly going, whoa, wait a minute. This is not the Paul Ryan that I was voting for maybe 20 years ago. And I think that I think he's really sort of lost touch with us and what we are like. And so he's traveling around the country and having his picture taken at $10,000 a pop. That's not us. That's not the first CD.
Now, it's pretty easy for Democrats to prevail in the cities of Kenosha and Racine. We know that, maybe in parts of Rock County. But the northern part of the district is judged to be pretty conservative. What's your strategy? Are you going to try to win in Kenosha and Racine by such overwhelming margins that you knock out the rest of the vote if you were to get the nomination? What's the strategy to get to a majority?
Well, we always want a strong performance, in Kenosha and Racine and in Janesville. And I think I know I'm going to have a very strong performance in Janesville and working very hard in Kenosha and Racine. But we cannot forget we cannot forget the middle of the district. And, you know, those voters care about a lot of the same things that I do. They care about whether or not they have access to health care. They care about good jobs. One of the things that I care about most is sustainable energy and making sure that that we are investing in that kind of energy and lessening our dependence on fossil fuels and non-renewables. And, you know, the people of the first congressional district care about their water and their land and their air. They do. I mean, there's a huge movement of people that are against the Enbridge pipeline in Walworth County. And that is really a concern because that is a, first of all, it's being upscaled tremendously, and it is carries tar sands oil through the district. And if you know anything about tar sands oil, it's incredibly highly toxic, and it's, of course, it's got more toxic material in it. So you send the oil down with the toxic material, and then you send the toxic material back after it's sucked out of the oil. And so it goes through the district basically twice. And this is the Enbridge company. And the Enbridge company has a few problems and has had several spills in Wisconsin. They are responsible for the spill in Michigan. And so appealing to these people, and by the way, also Enbridge is using eminent domain to take away land so they can expand this pipeline. They have made it possible so that with the state legislature to not be required to hold additional insurance in the event of a spill. So there's been just a lot of you know, arm twisting with this company, and it's not in our benefit. And so the people of Walworth and Waukesha, and, you know, those people care about a lot of these same things, and we're going to be talking to them, and I think that our message will resonate.
And you're distinguishing your position from that of Congressman Ryan in what way?
Well, he actually agreed with the pullout of the Paris Accord. And so you know, the whole idea of clean air and water doesn't seem to be on his radar. And, you know, it's interesting because he likes to talk about himself as someone that, you know, cares about the environment. He likes to go hunting and fishing and that kind of thing. And I think that's great. I want to preserve that. I think that our hunting and fishing tradition in Wisconsin is something to be preserved. And that means that you have to have a clean water and air and land. And so that's it. That's also something that distinguishes me from Mr. Bryce. I am against the expansion of this pipeline. I think our resources, our time, and our focus should be on sustainable energy more than on pipelines and that kind of thing.
How else is your candidacy different from Randy Bryce's? What separates the two of you?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that separates me from him is the fact that I have been elected twice. I'm on the Janesville School Board, and it's not just a theoretical thing with me. I've also managed to, I run as a progressive. I'm not hiding from that at all. And I run as a progressive, and I also work very hard to try to develop policies or keep my progressive values intact as I'm creating policies and supporting policies on the Janesville School Board. Let me give you an example. With Act 10 came a lot of attacks, obviously, on education, but also on the health care that we provide our faculty and staff. And so there was a movement or a trend to try to change those benefits, impose a spousal surcharge on our teachers and our staff. We have been able to maintain a really good health insurance plan for our teachers. It has required some shared sacrifice. They've had to contribute more. We've contributed, you know, but together we've worked it out. And I think that is something that separates me too, is that I've been in there. I've been in the trenches. I've worked with other people and worked with the other side to try to solve our problems. And to me, as your congressperson, that's probably my biggest job, is to try to get stuff done and talk to people and to find common you know, our common denominator, right? Things that we can work on to try to get things done for people.
Well, as you know, Kathy, there were a lot of people who generally vote Democratic who went Republican. A lot of blue-collar and white-collar folks voted Republican that might otherwise have voted Democrat in the last election. Can the Democratic Party get these people back?
I think so. I think that we need to be expressing our values better. See, one of the criticisms I've had of the Democratic Party, and I've been a Democrat for a long time. My first campaign I ever worked on, it was 1972. I was 10 years old. I dropped lit. But anyway, if I could, you know, express a criticism of the Democratic Party, it would be that sometimes I feel it's too timid, that it has these core values, but then it kind of wants to equivocate, you know, and it shifts its ideals a little bit to meet the audience because it's, you know, sometimes afraid that they're just not going to quite understand that. And so I think that, you know, if we've learned anything from Senator Sanders and his campaign, is that, you know, you just have to, let's be authentic, right? Let's be who we are. So this is who I am. I believe in Medicare for all. You know, end of discussion in that respect, right? I think that that's incredibly important. I believe in protecting our environment. I believe in, you know, good-paying family jobs and working very hard to do that. And that's it.
Tell me about your campaign organization. Where do you stand? Do you have any employees? Do you have people working for you? Mm-hmm. How's it going?
It's going very well. I have a campaign manager, and we have, you know, like a finance person and that helps us out in making sure that, you know, we're in compliance and that kind of thing. And I have a couple of consultants in branding and, you know, and email and so on. But we're trying to be as lean and mean as possible to make sure that we use our resources well. You know, two most important things, time and money.
Ms. Myers, if you were to summarize your candidacy, why should you be the next congressperson and why should you represent the Democratic Party?
Okay. Well, I think
briefly.
That, yes, I believe that I should be the next congressperson because I will be accountable to people, and I will come back and I will talk with them and I will meet with them. I'm also think that I can, I'm the kind of person that is more interested in just getting things done and doing the right thing for people than I am about whether or not, it's my name on a door. It's not about me. It's about representing the people of this district. I also think that as a person who's been elected twice and that I am in the best position to face Congressman Ryan.
Thank you, Ms. Kathy Myers, for being on Community Matters today. And thanks to you, Randy Bryce, for joining us as well. As always, I encourage our listeners to get informed and get involved. For Community Matters, this is Lena Iaquinta. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Outhouse, honoring personal legacies and the circle of life. Allow the compassionate, caring staff at Piasecki Outhouse to take care of your funeral needs, serving the community since 1931.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz at WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.